Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to Living Your Life with Leanne Lang. Thanks once again to John Milkey at Blast Podcast for producing these episodes and getting them out despite us still not being back in our studios. For many of us, life is still somewhat on pause. For some of you, though, things have like never been busier during this pandemic. And if you're a professional athlete, well, I'm not sure how many of you are actually listening to this right now, but life has come to a very uncomfortable and scary standstill. So let me dig in for more on this topic. You can hand him a hockey stick and he can shoot, a pair of running shoes and he will sprint from the blocks. You can throw him a football and he'll run into the end zone and then he'll celebrate while playing on his guitar. Essentially, he is what my friends and I would call the man of all seasons. But that's not the reason why Brendan Galanders is joining us today on the podcast. This hometown talent, well, kind of, we'll get to that, and former Ottawa UGGs player and kinesiology major is a fan favorite with the CFL's Red Blacks. But with a season on hold, life on hold, Brendan is going back to his roots and to his education, helping others stay on track with their health and wellness goals and giving young athletes an added advantage for their own uncertain futures. We're talking nutrition and fitness and recovery. We're talking staying on top of mind and on top of your game, even when the finish line is not quite known. So I'm really excited to have Brendan joining us. Great to have you here.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Leanne. It's awesome to be here.
Okay. You know, sometimes it's really tough to schedule athletes in, you know, between training camps and training and game days and, you know, needing to get into rehab and recovery. Life has really slowed down for you these last couple of months. How are you holding up?
It's been a little bit of a challenge from a training standpoint and just a mental standpoint, keeping my head in the game. But, you know, I'm fortunate to have a great support system, and OSEG and the staff down at Lansdowne has basically given me everything I need to continue my journey and prep for hopefully an eventual season.
For a lot of athletes, and I was thinking there was an aspect of recovery of your, like, injuries have been healed. You know, the body hasn't been beaten and bruised in game days and injuries. Do you feel a sense of that your body has had a chance to recover from any of the injuries it might have incurred?
Yeah, absolutely. That's definitely one positive of what we've all been going through. It's forced me to adapt my training. I've been doing a lot more bodyweight exercises, a lot more yoga. I kind of renewed my passion for that. And like you said, just through that sort of time off and away from the grind of actually being on field, my body does feel great. It's hasn't felt this good for a few years.
A few years. Okay. So mentally, can I hit on that right now? I mean, we have so much that I want to get to, but I'm really fascinated by what athletes have had to do to stay focused, to stay somewhat in, you know, like that visualization of what it would feel like to be in a game, you know, environment or to keep up that training, because there's a difference between being able to self-motivate and the difference between having 60 of your teammates with you on the field, kind of getting through practices. So what was it like for you kind of as we were into the pandemic and into the social distancing and kind of being on our own that you started to realize that life was definitely going to be different, that training camp wasn't coming around anytime soon, and watching the headlines, watching the decisions as decisions were made?
Yeah, I mean, first and foremost, I miss the guys. You know, when you spend every day together for about 6 months, you grow attached. So it's a little bit hard not being able to see the family that we've built down at Lansdowne. So that's one challenge. And then obviously not being able to train the way I want to or have access to the equipment that I need was definitely another factor that has made this period or transition difficult. But, you know, for me, the biggest thing was just establishing a routine. And that routine is kind of guided my way through the quarantine, and I've really kept it very similar on a weekly basis from the very start. And it paid off. You know, luckily, we just started getting back into the facility. The facility reopened 2 weeks ago. So now I'm back training at TD Place in the way that I want to. And like I said, my body feels good. And I really physically don't feel like I missed a beat from my time off. And I credit that for my ability to stay in a routine and maintain that.
Okay. You're a disciplined professional athlete. All right. We're starting off at that aspect. I mean, this is your life. This is your livelihood. Also, have you been able to have similar conversations with your teammates, or has it been different for those who might've just been excited to get into the league or to speak with teammates who were probably on the verge of this might've been their last season. Retirement was right around the corner. Like, everyone's kind of coming into this with a very different mindset and experience behind them.
Yeah, there's a lot of frustration involved from a training standpoint. I know actually a lot of the guys in the States, their training didn't really halt. Obviously, the U.S. approached the quarantine periods and stuff like that a little bit different than we did here in Canada. And I don't want to say it's less strict, but I think that a lot of more of our facilities in Canada closed down. And obviously, the Americans not being able to cross the border right now is a huge aspect. And then just the unknowns. You know what? From our standpoint, as CFL players, we aren't being told a lot from the league. We don't have a tentative start date. The majority of us don't even know if the CFL is going to honor our contracts right now. So, I mean, from a professional and a job standpoint, our lives kind of at a halt and a crossroads right now, where there's just a lot of what ifs. And that's a little bit of a different situation that I don't think any of us have experienced before.
Right. There's sometimes that financial concern, you know, and I've known enough of you over the last 20 some years that, you know, some of you have other jobs, other things to do in the off season. It, you know, there's a lot of you coming at this from very different ways. So is there a fear? Like, is there a sense of that, of what is going to happen?
Yeah, I mean, I know a lot of guys are scared. I mean, we at the end of the day, we're professional athletes, but we're human beings that need to provide for our family. And my biggest issue with this being dragged on without having any sort of decision dates or knowing whether we're going to get paid or when, it's just that if the season doesn't end up happening this year, some guys will have missed out on opportunities for full-time work over the past few months. And I mean, that's kind of a unique situation where other people in other jobs in the world don't have to necessarily face. And I know a lot of people have been laid off, and by no means am I saying that we are in the worst situation possible, because I'm very fortunate for what I do, and I still feel like I'm in a good situation. But there are a lot of guys with families that don't know when the next paycheck's coming, and that's stressful. And like I said, if this draws on to August and September, and we find out that we aren't having a season, we just missed out on an entire summer where we could have been contributing to society and working full time, and we weren't able to just because we were left in the dark.
Okay, so Brennan, we follow each other on social media. So I have seen what you have done over the last year or so, and I have followed along, right? So, and I've admired it because, you know, it's funny. I'm watching Edelman's, have you watched that yet? He has managed, we're talking about the Patriots player here, you know, managed to kind of create this other persona outside of just what happens on the football field. And I found with you, you have a little bit of that also. You like to do your videos, you like to talk nutrition, you like to kind of talk about products, you'll talk about your conditioning. But I was really impressed when I saw the work that you were starting to do with young athletes and talking speed and agility and taking some of the things that you've done and incorporate it with young athletes. And it's interesting because that was always your passion. Let's go back. So we always like to call you like homegrown talent. But you pretty much, your dad was in the Navy, is that right?
Yeah, exactly.
So you moved a lot. You moved around a lot, especially as a child.
Yeah, born in Victoria, BC, moved to Ottawa, moved to Halifax, and then came back to Ottawa. My dad was in the Navy for 20 years before he retired, and we settled down in Ottawa.
So, okay, so that's why after the age of 10, we take full credit for you and your football career, and that you're able to play here and grow up in the system. You end up at Ottawa U. You end up actually with the kinesiology?
Yep, exactly.
Okay, so what was the interest for you there? What has been the interest for you to stay in that physical environment, even with your studies?
I mean, for me, it's the process of physical preparation. I absolutely love it. I know we talk about the grind of the off season and it being long when you're a professional athlete. Sometimes you have an off season of as long as 6 months where you're doing barely any football specific training. It's all in the gym or speed training on the track or on the field. And if you don't love that process, it's really hard to do day in and day out. But it is so important to not only train proper way, but to make sure that you're covering the proper way, making sure that your nutrition's on point. And that all basically adds up to becoming the complete athlete. So the fact that I fell in love with the process of training very young, I probably stepped into the gym for the first time when I was about 14 years old at the YMCA in Orleans, actually, and kind of just, like I said, fell in love with the process of getting ready for the season. So that's something that I wanted to study and further my knowledge. And now that I have a good foundation of knowledge, I honestly feel like I had such good mentors growing up that I owe it to the Ottawa community to kind of pass on some of what I can show them.
Were there things that you learned that surprised you about the human body or what it's capable of or how it heals, how it finds its energy, how it does things? Because that's a lot of the breakdown is the things that you studied that you eventually are working with now.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's a ton of things about the human body that absolutely amazes me. I mean, what you can put it through, first and foremost, what your body will adapt to is absolutely incredible. If you look at some of the training that Marines go through and how their body adapts in such a short period of time, it's absolutely unbelievable. And then in terms of training methods for different sports and energy systems that your body can use. And then once I got to the professional athlete level, the thing that really stood out to me was the importance of recovery. And I mean, you can't continuously break down your body without supporting recovery, because the recovery process is where you're actually growing stronger and getting bigger. And the better you are at recovering, the more capable you'll be able to reproduce the results day after day. So that's really been my focus for the past few years, is anybody can break their body down and your body will adapt to basically any stress that you put it under. But the better you are recovering, the better your next workout will be. And that's what truly matters.
It's funny because you started to say, like, in recovery, that's where you got bigger. And then my first thought was, no, to all of the women listening to this, you are not going to get bigger. Like, stop,
no,
you know?
No, so, exactly.
Like, for you, it's recovery in terms of the muscle, like, you are trying to kind of build and to kind of create that muscular foundation. But recovery is just as important for, you know, the moms that are going to the gym. I think we tend to think that it only applies to certain people, but all of our bodies, if we're putting it through a stress of a workout, need to have the proper nutrition and the proper time out for it to recover.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. And it's funny that you bring that up, because it's funny. I use the example of growing and getting bigger, but in reality, that even from an athletic standpoint, a lot of the time, that's the exact opposite of what you're trying to get. And that's the biggest conversation that I have with a lot of my high school athletes, especially, you know, high school guys just want to pack on as much weight as they can. And they're eating 10 burgers from McDonald's trying to gain weight. And they're changing their body in a way that they don't move as well. And people don't realize that even for every pound of muscle you put on your body, even if it's pure muscle and you don't gain any fat, you still have to basically also add the power and strength to overcome that added weight when you're moving. So when we're talking about sports specific training, which is the majority of what I do, even just trying to grow your muscles is should never be the main focus of training, unless you're a competitive bodybuilder, which is very far from the realm of what I coach or what I do. So it absolutely applies to everyone. Even if it's just as simple as getting into a routine to calm your body and mind down at the end of the day, it'll improve sleep. And the number one way to improve your health overall is to improve your sleep quality. So it definitely applies to women, men, kids, teenagers. Everybody could basically use proper recovery strategies.
Okay, so can you take us through then, if you don't mind, like start to finish of a day for you, when it's a training day, when you're putting in the proper nutrition, like take us through that. And I'm wondering, when in any of this am I going to find that you'd stop to take like a breath or to do mental prep as well. So, okay, take us through.
Yeah. So in the morning, I set my alarm for 7 o'clock every single morning, which actually I feel makes me a late riser. I'm definitely consider myself a morning person, but that's normally because I'm in bed like just after 9 o'clock. So I normally wake up at 7 in the morning.
Wait, you go to bed by 9? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You guys are in bed at 9? Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. That's impressive. Okay. Yeah.
I've never been able to stay up late. I always feel better getting stuff done in the morning. And if I stay up past 9, all I'm doing is sitting and watching TV on the couch. So for me, recovering and getting to sleep is more important. And then I can actually get stuff done in the morning. So it's definitely a lifestyle choice that I have used and love. But in the morning, I have the same coffee and protein smoothie every single morning. Then after that, about an hour and a half from there, I'll drive into the stadium. I'll have my workout from 10 to noon at the stadium. Then I will either drive to one of the turf fields in Ottawa or a grass field by my house. And I'll normally be on this field from about 1 o'clock till about 2, doing various speed training, agility, running routes, football specific stuff. And then now I'm on the field coaching from 4 to 6, and then it'll be dinner time. I'll eat lunch somewhere in between my field training and coaching, and then I'll make dinner when I get home, and that'll normally take me to about 7:30, and then I have about an hour and a half until I go to bed.
That's crazy. I did not see you as this early to bed kind of, you know, it didn't quite fit the persona that I had thought about. And so I had Tommy Europe on not long ago, and he was really interesting because a lot of it came down to, I don't know, maybe it's because we've gotten older, but the slowing down part, like your go, go, go is all I've heard right now. Has there been a time yet that you have started to slow down a bit? I know you had mentioned yoga or taking the time to just bring your system down, because all I've heard right now is like, is go, 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 go. I mean, granted, you're incredibly young and you can do that right now, but it catches
no.
up.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I practice yoga on the days that I don't lift. So right now that's 3 times a week that I do an hour's worth of yoga. And I absolutely love that time. But it's funny that you say that, because I've actually the past 2 years I've worked with a mental skills coach, and the majority of what we work on and go over is bedtime routines. So getting my body to calm down at the end of the day, because like you said, I'm all go, go, go and wound up and caffeinated the entire day pretty much. So for me, the hardest part of that is exactly like you said, calming my body and my mind so that I'm able to get the sleep, which I've already touched on is by far the most important thing that you can do to improve your health. So yeah, together we kind of came up with a pre-bed routine that's I more or less go through every night that helps me sleep and cool my body down before I try and sleep.
Okay. So, you know, I'm going to ask you what that, I don't know what you're thinking, but you know, I'm asking you what that routine is like.
Yeah, absolutely. The main focus is that you target both your body and your mind. So for me, I'm the type of, with all the running and lifting and stuff like that, I mean, my body takes a long time to cool down, probably more so than my mind. I'm the type of person that gets like super twitchy at night when I'm asleep and stuff like that. So we do what's called progressive muscle relaxation. And basically what it is, if you YouTube it, there's actually some really good guided systems on there. But basically what it is full body contraction. So you go muscular group by muscular group, starting from your feet, working your way up to your head and neck and stuff like that. And it's basically just contracting the muscles and then letting everything go. And that letting everything go kind of signals to your body that, okay, it's time to cool down. And then in terms of what I do for my mind, the biggest thing has been writing. And I've never been a fan. I know everyone talks about writing 5 things or 10 things that you're grateful for at the end of the day. But for me in my head, writing without prompts works a lot better than if I have a prompted question. So I just tend to write whatever's on my mind. And sometimes most of the time it's as simple as I didn't like the workout that I had that day, and this is how I'm going to change it. I'm going to do four sets instead of three sets, or change up the exercise or something like that, because my mind's always spinning, and sometimes it's as simple as that. And then other times, it's deeper conversations or things that I internalized throughout the day, things that bothered me. It really helps to just kind of clear my mind before I go to bed. And then the trick also, if you're going to keep a journal like that, and that's what's really important, is I always revisit it afterwards, because especially some of the things that I have internalized or some issues that I've had during the day, going back and reading how I've handled them or how they've affected me or my mood that day really basically teaches me how to handle them in the future. So I think that that is something that has really been a game changer for me as well.
See, I find this really fascinating. And there's a part of me that wants to have like any 14-year-old and up listening to this, because these are where the habits start to come into play. Like, is this something that came to you a little bit later, or had you been doing this from the time you were young?
This is really only the past 2 years, in all honesty. And what brought it out, and I'll be honest with you, is conversations that I had, like I said, with my mental health coach or my mental skills coach about certain feelings of anxiety and how I dealt with them. And this was specifically related to football, but then, I mean, obviously, naturally, you notice carryover to other parts of life. If I handle anxiety one way on the field, I'm most likely going to handle anxiety the same way off the field in certain issues. And, you know, eventually, if you hold on or internalize too many of these things, they weigh you down, and you need to start basically getting coping mechanisms or strategies to be able to move forward and progress. And like I said, going back and revisiting the journal definitely helps me out with similar situations in the future.
Do you wish that you would have this, you know, as a 16, 17, 18-year-old kid? I mean, think of the gift you could have given yourself by starting to implement this then.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's funny for sure. Like I definitely wish that I had better coping skills when I was a teenager or younger. I mean, I was fortunate. I always had an amazing support system via family and friends, and I never felt any pressure in terms of with the sport or football at all. No one ever put any pressure on me. And to be honest, I really didn't put that much pressure on myself either. I kind of became a professional athlete organically. I loved the game and had fun. I had so much fun that I put my heart and soul into it, and it got me where it was today. I never felt any pressure, but I know that that's not the same circumstances everyone feels today. So, I mean, and definitely everything's just getting more competitive by the day. So I definitely would suggest anyone, if you're having issues or dealing with anxiety, or whether it's sports related or anything else, write it down, and you'd be surprised when you reread it at how insightful or exactly how much you held inside. And sometimes even just reading it out or blurting it out on paper just helps, even if no one else is reading it except yourself. It helps to get it out into the air, and then you're able to make coping strategies yourself.
No, I love it. Do you incorporate any of this discussion when you talk to young athletes? I mean, I know right now a lot of it's based on speed, agility, just going through the motions on the field. Do you wish that you have these opportunities to have these discussions with young athletes, or do you see yourself in them?
Oh, I love talking with young athletes for sure. I definitely see myself in them, and if they'll listen, I'll talk. And I mean, my job first and foremost is to make sure that I inspire the next generation, and also make sure that they're having fun. There's nothing worse than being put in a situation where you feel anxiety or you're putting pressure on yourself, and somebody else kind of piles that on. I've had experiences with amazing coaches, and I've had experiences with bad coaching or leadership styles that just haven't clicked with myself. And I mean, it takes a toll. It's hard to show up, and I say hard to show up for work because that's what it is now. But at the end of the day, first and foremost, as a coach, your job is to make sure that every single person is having fun. And like I said, that's how I became professional. I didn't put any pressure on myself. I wasn't 16, 17, 18, 19 years old saying I want to become a professional football player. That wasn't how it was with me. I just loved the game and had fun and had such a good experience that I kept going and kept going and kept going. And like I said, eventually the opportunity arose. And that's, I guess, how I try and treat coaching now with the youth that I coach. Is I try and make sure first and foremost they fall in love with what they're doing and they know why they're doing it, so that they're able to just have fun with the experience. And even if something else had gone wrong with their day, they love the hour that they come and work with me.
So I mentioned right off the lead, I mean, I know you played hockey until like what, 14, 15, you were playing decent. You're a Canadian boy, so you were playing decent level hockey there. I know. Yep. That you ran, right? You ran track, which, yep, would make sense as a running back. It makes sense. I'm surprised. Have you been recruited yet to be on the bobsled team? That seems to be the next progression for a lot of athletes, especially guys of your size and status. Have you been approached yet for that?
Yeah, I have. Yeah. It's funny. It was actually about 3 years ago now, but the selection camp, they do it in Lake Placid. And it happened to be during the training camp. So, I mean, I wasn't near the end of my career at that point, so it wasn't an option. But it's funny that you say that, yeah, because they did reach out to me and ask if I wanted to try it out. So
for sure. By the way, I have been down that track at Lake Placid. And I did. Oh, yeah? I went to early on in my sports anchoring career, I was down there and I did this whole series on the athletes, a lot of them football, that were training. So we did a whole bunch of stuff at Terry Fox and at Mooney's Bay and then the sleds and all that. And then we went down to Lake Placid and I got in the back. I ended up being the brake man, but I think his name is Ralph Pickler or something like that. And he had won the world championships on that track. He was the driver that took me down. Wow. Yeah, it was an insane ride. But what they should have considered is that they put a rookie who was more concerned about getting the shot and getting like my scripting right for the camera, that I really hadn't paid full attention as to how I had to brake and how hard I had to brake. Like I really didn't realize how hard I had to brake. And so we're coming and he's yelling the whole time, right? Cause he's yelling certain things and I'm trying to remember what they told me. And it gets to the point where like, I really hear him screaming and I know I'm trying to brake, but I didn't realize I had to put my entire body into the whole braking part. And we crashed essentially. We ran out of track.
Oh, no.
No, we ran out of track. We went flying off the track. And, you know, I wasn't really fully aware of everything that was going on. Like my head was down. I wasn't looking up. And once we came to a stop, he said to me that he has crashed a lot of times. I mean, his world champion and had been, that was his sport. And he said he's never been more scared of what that last 30 seconds was like. Anyway, we crashed the sled. Oh my God. Anyway, I have very fond memories when people talk about Lake Placid and going down the bobsled track. Okay, so let's get back. If that was just like a sidetrack story, but I haven't told that story in forever. Okay, so you are now back on the field. You are working with kids and multi-sport because you've got kids in a number of different sports usually that are working on agility and speed. Because what is the essential aspect of being quicker, of being faster, being able to pivot and turn and go for athletes in so many different sports?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. When we talk about field sport athletes, I've worked with football players. I've worked with women football teams. I've worked with soccer teams, rugby teams. And essentially, it all comes down to change of direction and agility skills. I mean, a lot of the times those terms are used interchangeably, but change of direction refers to exactly what you're talking about. Any change of direction when you're running one way, your ability to quickly change direction running another way, whereas agility involves a certain external stimulus. So it's more sport specific in the sense that you are changing direction based off the position of a different player. You're changing direction based off of any sort of external cue, me yelling, turn right. Or, like I said, someone else basically coming to run into you. That's kind of agility. And agility and acceleration go hand in hand. And in field sports, it's very advantageous to be as fast accelerating as possible, because people think of field sports being played on a big field, but once you get 11, 12, 13 players out on there, the spaces get limited, and very rarely do you see players in any field sport go on 50-yard runs straight, running straight. It's advantageous to be able to get to your top speed as fast as possible, because you're going to beat someone to the spot. So for the soccer players I train, for example, the majority of coaches that coach soccer as a sport specific skill all train endurance. They'll go on 5 kilometer runs or 10 kilometer runs. But the problem with only focusing on endurance and how fit the team is that they aren't going to win any races to the ball. So it's the faster you're able to cover ground, the more advantageous you're going to look on the field. You don't have to be the fastest player per se, but if you're the fastest accelerating, then you're going to get to the spot faster, especially when we talk about condensed fields and a whole bunch of players. And when you're sprinting 5-10 yards at a time, being able to change direction is exceptionally important.
So you're able to have that discussion. So is it bursts, like, how, take us through like what that would be training like, and then take it for like an average person who might be doing, and I love to incorporate this, but to incorporate intervals into training, right? Like I'd often get really frustrated when I would see the same person every single day on the same treadmill doing the exact same run every day. And, you know, and I would want to go and shake them up and be like, okay, so instead of staying on the treadmill for an hour, stay on it for a half hour and every 30 seconds sprint, you know, like how much does that change, you know, what the muscles and what the body is doing? Because you see people just repeating things, the same thing. And it's just like, eventually your body, it just goes into cruise control. It doesn't even think it's working anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Like you said, in terms of, let's put it this way, I'm a professional running back, and the most I've ever run in literally the last 5 years at one time is probably about 2 kilometers at a steady state. I don't train endurance because the average football play lasts 6 seconds. So why would I go out and run 5 kilometers? It's just not efficient. A word that I use all the time in terms of training is optimal. So just because something works does not mean that it's optimal for the individual. And the more efficient you can be in your training, like you said, the less time you have to spend. Why would you go out and, like you said, run slow on a treadmill for 1 hour when you can burn the same amount of calories and be working different or multiple energy systems doing 30-second sprints for 20 minutes? It's just more efficient doing it that way, for sure. And like I said, the big carryover in terms of team sports is that you're training multiple energy systems. So your body uses different fuel sources depending on the energy system that you are training. And yes, like I said, the majority of people think that soccer is an endurance sport. But at the end of the day, if you look at the runs and the pace of the runs, they are running a long distance, but it's made up of very short bursts over 90 minutes. It's not like they're running at a slow pace for 90 minutes. And the more you train that way, the more your body adapts that way. And that's not what you want. You want fast soccer players. You do not want soccer players that are slow. If you look at some of the best soccer players in the world right now, the big thing was about how high Cristiano Ronaldo can jump. I guarantee you he didn't learn to jump that high just by going on 10 kilometer runs. You have to be extremely explosive. You have to be extremely strong, and you have to be fast to be able to move your body in that direction. And so that's basically what we try and instill with a lot of these field sports athletes, is that you need to train multiple energy systems. And a lot of the time, especially in the more competitive groups, so the higher level you get, a lot of the time, the more time you get with your soccer coach, the less time you get with a physical trainer or a sprint coach. And like I said, often those athletic qualities are neglected.
Okay, I'm going to stop you because I'm going to have you go back like 3 minutes and talk about energy systems, because you talked about it in a way that I think would apply and for people to understand how we're working different energy systems. So can you break some of those down in terms of how we train and what we're looking for as our end goal?
Yeah, I mean, you have your anaerobic system, which is basically your steady state cardio. You'll be in your aerobic system, and you're primarily using fat as the energy source for that. So that's basically literally covers all your day-to-day activities. And then when you start getting into faster paced, higher heart rate, you go through basically anaerobic exercise. So you have your anaerobic glycolytic, and then you have your other anaerobic systems. And basically what that does is it is a faster mechanism to get your body energy. But the problem is that the problem is that you're basically using carbs as a energy source, and you tire quicker through that. So, and I say this, but I also want to say that at any given time, you're most likely using all three energy sources. Like the aerobic energy system does not ever turn off. Just because you are sprinting at a high pace for 5 seconds and then rest doesn't mean that you're only burning carbs for fuel. It means that you are primarily burning carbs for fuel. It might be like an 80-20 breakdown, carbs to fat, basically. And all it is different energy sources and ways that your body delivers your energy. And in terms of the anaerobic exercise, you also have to factor in the lactic acid threshold, your lactate levels, and it can get super complicated. But basically what I want to express is that for the average individual, you're normally using every energy system all at once. So when people assume that they want to burn fat, so they want to lose body fat, so they do long, steady state cardio, well, sure, your body's primarily burning fat for energy, but the problem is that you're still burning less calories, or the equivalent of calories, which is the overall driver of body composition. So even though you think that you're burning more fat doing an hour of slow exercise, you're probably burning more fat doing 20 minutes of interval training, like you said, at a higher heart rate, even though you're using a different energy system that primarily uses carbs for energy as opposed to fat. So that's a big misdemeanor, is that people think that they have to do this steady state stuff and stay on the treadmill for an hour. But at the end of the day, the total calories that you've burned over the time is what's really going to drive body composition.
Yeah, because you see me smiling right there as you were talking, because I'm a really big believer in this, and I've been, you know, hosting the workouts that I've been doing. It's just like it's got to go up and down. It's got to go into speed and then calm, and then your body is constantly being tested, and it doesn't know what's coming at it next. I find we get into a very serious cruise control very quickly, and people need to remember to be able to change things up. So for you, that's one really great way for anyone to be able to look at that. You talked a lot, and I've seen a lot of your posts on nutrition and on recovery. So why is that, and how has that become so important for you? And how can it apply to that 14 to 19 year old that's trying to bulk up, and to that mom that's trying to lose the final 10 pounds after having a baby? Like, how does all of it come into play?
For sure. Well, without getting too technical, basically, from the point of when you're done your workout to the next workout, the nutrition that you put into your body is going to determine your physical preparedness for the next workout. So if you break down your body, or it doesn't even have to be nutrition wise, if you work out and exercise to an extent where you aren't able to fully recover before your next workout, then your body is not going to be capable of doing what you want it to do. And instead of progressing, you'll basically regress, and your body will not be able to grow or adapt and get stronger as well. So for me, the biggest thing, like when I'm in the gym, I'm always just protein after. I don't get anything too complicated, but also refueling your glycogen stores. So if you take some sort of carb supplement, for me it's gummy bears. Actually, I take 17 gummy bears to be exact with my post-workout shake. And with
like a normal gummy bear that you can find at the drugstore, like right out of a, like not like a fancy gummy bear with something added to it. No, just a normal sugar gummy bear.
Pure sugar, exactly, which is about 31 grams of carbs in the 17 gummy bears. And like I said, the reason why and the method behind that is because when you can congest protein and carbs at the same time, it actually increases the absorption rate of protein post-workout. So your body is able to absorb the protein that you just ate to a faster extent. Not necessarily a greater, because you're going to have a anabolic threshold where if you take, basically, it's normally around 30 to 40 grams per sitting. And that doesn't mean that your body won't use more protein than that. It means that in terms of a hormone response, your anabolic threshold, it won't get any higher. You've already stimulated it to the max.
Okay, can you wait 1 second? Okay, yep. Wait 1 second. This is not telling kids that as soon as they're done their practice, they can go and have 17 gummy bears. It's the science behind the combination with having the protein. If they're not adding, I want to make that really clear to everybody. This isn't a free for all to go have 17 gummy bears. It's what it does with the protein and how it all works together, right?
Absolutely. Okay. But I also want to say that demonizing certain foods is a bad idea as well. So when people try and say, oh, you shouldn't eat any sugar at all, well, that's not necessarily true, because your body interprets a carb as a carb once it's completely broken down. So at the end of the day, there are basically studies showing that you could literally get 100% of your daily intake of carbs from straight sugar, nothing else, and your body composition responds the exact same way. Now, the problem with that is that quantity. It's much easier to consume or overconsume sugar because it's not filling whatsoever. And there's very, very low nutritional value. So like you said, I ingest the gummy bears just because I'm about to do another workout in an hour. And the absorption rate of a carbohydrate is about 1 gram per minute. So in about 30 minutes, those gummy bears will have been absorbed in my body and let me get a little bit more prepared for the next workout. So that's the reasoning behind. Like I said, I don't want to get too complicated, but the methods for recovery start as soon as you're done one workout, because you need to set yourself up for the next workout. The way that your body adapts is in the rest and recovery, right? Essentially what you're doing when you're working out is you're micro tearing your muscles, and it's the cross bridging or the repair of the muscles that actually can elongate the muscle and also grow the muscle thickness, which leads to hypertrophy, which is muscular growth.
Okay. And by saying that, it's either going to give you getting bulkier and bigger for athletes, or it's allowing you to become a little bit more cut and leaner, that tone look that I think a lot of people are looking for as well. Is that safe?
Yeah, exactly. My point being is that if you all you ever do is break down your body and you don't adequately replenish it through nutrition or by rest, you're not going to progress. You're not going to progress to the extent that you could. And I say that you micro tear the muscles and then they grow, but I mean, you know, just like you already touched on with the females' hormones, there's so many factors that come into play. And I mean, when we talk about getting bigger, that's a process that we're talking about over years, not from workout to workout. We're just talking about getting physically prepared as you can to work out the next day.
Have you been amazed at what you have been able to see or with your own body by playing around with when you have your protein, how you do your recovery, what types of foods you're eating, like that you've been able to see and monitor your own success that way?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's caused a great deal of frustration for me too, because I feel like I have a great workout one day, and then the next day, I mean, everyone's been there. They have a feeling that they can barely walk or can barely lift. And I'm like, hey, I just worked out yesterday. I'm supposed to sprint on the field. I'm a field athlete. What am I doing? If I can't sprint, then how am I going to train? Like, what I do on the field is way more important than in the gym. So that's really why recovery is on the forefront in terms of that. I mean, you always want to recover so that the next day you're able to push yourself further and harder. And that's been the biggest eye opener for me, for sure, is that I need to be able to train the way that I want to day in and day out. And if I don't take care of my body physically and nutritionally, I'm not able to do that. And it's discouraging when you lift a certain weight on a Monday of this week, and then the next Monday you regress and you're like, why, how outcome that is. And it's, you really have to start looking at your nutritional choices and what you did for the rest of the week, because that's a bad indication. You're supposed to be progressing workout to workout.
What are some of the go-tos for you? Some of your favorite snacks, some of your favorite tips, some of the things that you'll grab on the go, or meals that you enjoy?
Eggs are a powerhouse food. If people do not want to supplement with whey protein, which is really the only supplement that I recommend to everybody, is whey protein. Milk is great. Chocolate milk is even better because it contains the sugars and the protein. So there would be no need to supplement with gummy bears or anything like that. I eat a lot of meat on a day to get my protein that way. I try and get as my caloric intake or macronutrient goals through whole foods as opposed to taking supplements that I can. But like you said, healthy fats, healthy carbs. So if you're going to eat a carb, make sure it's complex with a lot of other nutrients in it as well.
Can I give an example? I find people get confused when you say complex carbs.
Yeah, I mean, it can literally be as simple as switching to whole wheat bread from white bread, just because it has an increased amount of fiber. It probably has more vitamins and nutrients, things like that, as opposed to eating something that's white bread, which appears the same and probably tastes a little bit better, but it's lacking in some of the vitamins and minerals that you're getting out of the whole wheat version. So things like that. And I know that a lot of people are fans or have their own preferences in terms of high carb, low carb, high fat, low fat. And at the end of the day, they all work, as long as you are consuming the amount of calories. Like I've already said, the total amount of calories that you expend or take in is really going to be the driver in terms of your body composition at the end of the day. So there's no right or wrong answer. A lot of it is personal preference, but demonizing certain, like I said, demonizing sugars, demonizing some sort of diet, the fitness industry does way, way too much of that. And unfortunately, there's a lot more misinformation than there is good information. And it's confusing a lot of times, because you can go and Google and there'll be 1,000 different answers to the best diet. And at the end of the day, the best diet for someone is the one that works for them and they're able to sustain, because they're not going to stay on something that they don't like doing.
Where are you going for your information? Like, what or who inspires you? Where do you learn from? What books do you kind of inhale if you are?
Yeah, I mean, I've taken university level nutrition courses, so the majority of my information is guided from a lot of the university classes that I've taken. In terms of training philosophies, I follow as many trainers as I can on social media, and a lot of them put out great content as well. And obviously through the strength and conditioning textbooks, there's some great information in there as well. But the main thing is, like I said, is basically finding out or figuring out how many calories you're expending on a day. That's the main thing. People that diet without knowing that are guessing, as far as I'm concerned. And I'm not saying that everybody has to count calories, but if you are able to know what a certain caloric intake day would look like. Like, so for example, if I can eat 3 eggs for breakfast and 2 sandwiches for lunch and then roasted chicken breast and green beans for dinner, and that is X amount of calories, then you basically have a set understanding of what you can or can't eat on a daily basis. And it's easy from there. So even counting calories or using a food tracking app for a week opens up a lot of people's eyes in terms of what they can eat. And a lot of the times people don't realize that once they make healthier choices, they can actually eat more than they were before. So that's basically what opens up a lot of people's eyes.
I think doing it for a week shocks a lot of people. Plus, yeah, when you're putting down that you're having a burger, but then you're like, oh, well, it was actually a cheeseburger with bacon. And then you have to add those on and you actually put some ketchup and mayo on it. You know, you don't realize where a lot of the things are coming from or why you're scratching your head often going, well, I don't understand why things aren't working, or I don't feel better, I'm not getting stronger. It's like there's a lot of hidden things that people don't consider.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. And for everything that's healthy for you, there's an alternative that probably seems just as healthy, but it's not. Like burgers, like you said, perfect example. Is there cheese on it? Are they using ground sirloin? Is it extra lean? Is it medium? Is it like, there's so many different factors. Is the bun a brioche bun, which is heavy in fats as well? Or is it a whole wheat bun that has a whole lot of vitamins and minerals? There's so many options on a daily basis. So like you said, I really encourage everyone to track what they eat for a week. And a lot of the time, if you realize you can make healthier choices, you're actually able to eat more food than you were before for the same amount of calories. And it's not magic. It's just learning how to manipulate the variables in what you eat.
You mentioned the brioche bun. We were at friends. We went to in our social distancing backyard, patio barbecue, and they served the burgers with brioche buns. And like, keep in mind, like, there's not much bread in my house. Like, we have like, but we'll have like a whole grain, whatever. And the kids had their burger with this brioche bun, and they were like, "It tastes like cake."
Yeah, exactly.
Like for them, it was like, this is like cake. And I'm like, I know, I don't know why it even comes under like the bread. I mean, it's cake, right? But yeah. It's funny when you don't have that, just how much sweeter things actually kind of take. So I've got like just a couple minutes more to go. So for you, I know that you were doing personal training, you're doing these strength, agility, speed workouts, and you're working with a number of organizations and with young athletes. Where's your focus right now? Like where's your mindset at as we're into the summer months?
Well, I'm still holding out hope for a season right now. Even though it might come across as a long shot, I'm still holding out hope, so still training as hard as I can to get my mind physically and mentally ready.
it's like Dumb and Dumber. So you're saying there's a chance,
exactly,
like that, like
exactly
99%, but there's exactly. Do you go through visualization? Do you play, games in your mind? It's different when you're training and, you're working on agility and catching a ball, but do you visualize that as soon as you catch the ball, you're getting hit, that there's a guy on top of you? Like how in that do you physically prepare, but also mentally? Because it's going to be a very different change from being so long without any physical contact to then getting back into that frame.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to sound weird, but football is the easy part of it. I've been playing since I was 10 years old. I mean, it's second nature at this point. I'm not worried about the football aspect of it. I'm worried about getting my body physically prepared to endure what it goes through over the course of the season. Like you said, getting hit and making sure that my muscles aren't going to give it out on me halfway through the season. Getting physically prepared. And then in terms of mentally, it's hard right now. I mean, we have access to our playbooks, so I'm able to still keep my head in it that way, but it's tough to keep your mindset on football. Going into the stadium four times a week is definitely helping, but it's something that I really don't know what's going to happen with it. And I mean, it's not hard to keep my mind on football just because I absolutely love it. And training some of the guys and working with some amateur football players as well helps me mentally, just because I'm able to share and impart some wisdom with them and take off my helmet and put on a coach's hat, if you will. So it's a little bit of a different perspective for me, but at least it keeps my head in the game.
Well, I do. And I think especially for those that are listening, and there's a lot of fans in the city, right? It's like this was their summer nights, to be out and feel like they were alive and out and watching a game and, having a beer. Like there's something about being live at a sporting event for a lot of people. It's just, it's their escape.
Yeah, exactly. I miss them all too, right? That's one of the best things that we do here in Ottawa is after the game, let fans come down onto the field. And I mean, I'm always out there after games, and the amount of people that I meet and get to take pictures with, it's that aspect is something that I miss too, because I mean, it's crazy. I've seen people on the field that I haven't seen in 15 years, and people are coming up, hey, remember me? And it's always, that's always a highlight. And it's something that we normally get to do 9 times a year. And obviously I haven't been able to do that yet. I've been fortunate enough to run into a couple of fans at just at a grocery store and pizza place and stuff like that. So we got to talk that way, but I definitely miss the interaction with the fans and the community as well. So I'm in the same boat as them. I miss seeing them just as much.
No, it's I think we're all just in this crazy adjustment, this very surreal world, but I think for the kids that are able to start getting out, I mean, mine are finally back, you know, it's very different, but just to see a teammate and just to kick a ball or, you know, it's that little sliver of normalcy slowly trickling back, you know, it's really important. So any last words of advice, anything you want to pass on that I might not have gotten to, or your top three favorite things, or the book you want everyone to read? What else you got for me?
Biggest thing that I would leave everybody with is consistency is king. I mean, like I've already said, the best diet for you is the one you're going to stick to. Same thing applies with the best workout plan. The best workout plan for you is the one that you enjoy doing, and the one that's optimal for you, and the one that you're going to stick to doing. And changes don't happen overnight. That goes for mental changes and physical changes as well. So if it's worth doing, it's worth doing for a prolonged period of time, and stick with it, and you'll be able to see some changes.
So what's that for people to look up on YouTube for they're going to sleep?
It was progressive muscle relaxation.
Okay. So, and how long will that take you to do?
Oh, it's a 5-minute routine. Routine. It's very similar to guided meditations. I'm not sure if you're familiar with any of those things. They have a ton of guided meditations on YouTube as well. And progressive muscle relaxation has a ton of guided training as well.
No, I do. I love them. And I actually do it with my youngest because she has issues going to sleep. And so I've tried it. Some days it works. Some days she fights it. It just depends on. But she's going to bed at least 2 and a bit hours later than you, Brennan. I mean, this 9 o'clock cutoff for you. I was just like, wow. That was like my morning show days. Yeah. I really appreciate it. Where can people go? I mean, you've got a lot of information on your Instagram. Where should people go if they're looking for more other than going to the Red Blacks page?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, on my Instagram page, BeagleAnders25. I also have Twitter, and I always have an open door policy with anyone. I mean, I'm super easy to get into contact with. So if anyone has a question, training related, lifestyle related, anything, just reach out. I will literally answer everybody to the best of my ability. So it's never a problem. I love meeting new people, and this is my passion. So I love talking about it.
Well, it's wonderful. It's been great to have you on board, and I really crossing fingers. I know that, you know, I'm close with Nigel and Melissa. Nigel, and they just had their baby, right? And so it's kind of like, you know, I was like, well, Nigel had some wonderful quality time with little Luca through this, but I know he's dying to get back on the field. So really hoping that for the sake of all of the players and the league, and really for the sake of the league, and I won't get political, but, you know, we want you guys around. I think Canadians need it, and to be able to find a way to kind of get this up and going. So Brennan, really appreciate you being there and some really great information. And I hope some people actually try to incorporate some of that, the sleep techniques, and you had some wonderful kind of little tidbits of information to be able to pass on. So I really appreciate it. For all of you that are listening, that is another episode of Living Your Life with Leanne Lang. Please continue to share and to subscribe and to like and to let your friends know about it. It is awesome to be able to see the podcast growing from coast to coast and across all oceans. All right. Have a great day, everyone. See you back here next week.
I'm Andrea Askowitz.
And I'm Allison Langer. And we are the hosts of Writing Class Radio, a podcast, but we are so much more. We have writing classes. So if you are looking for live online classes where you can join a community, write to a prompt, get feedback, and get better, check out all our classes at writingclassradio.com.
writingclassradio.com. And listen to our podcast wherever you get your podcasts and at writingclassradio.com.